today is Monday, March 7th. Members, we have four bills on the DACA today. And first we have Senate File 3559. Senator Tomasoni is the chief author, but Senator Wieger, as a co-author, has agreed to present the bill for us this afternoon. Senator Wieger, welcome to the committee. I thought there was a rule that the first time you presented in the committee, you had to bring treats.
We'll take care of that.
This isn't finance, Senator Wieger, I'm not that. But welcome to the committee, Senator Wieger.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, committee members. It's an honor on behalf of our good friend, Senator Tomasoni, who's with us in spirit right now as the chief author, for me to co-author this amazing, inspiring bill. It also has tripartisan support. How many bills have that? I'd like to acknowledge also Senator Rarick, Senator Housley, and Senator Bach as additional co-authors. This bill provides $500,000 in a grant from DEED to Minnesota Diversified Industries. And representatives from MDI are here to tell you more about that company. It's headquartered in Minneapolis, and they also have locations in Cohasset, Grand Rapids, and Hibbing. What's so special about MDI is they provide opportunities, hope for many individuals with challenges of disabilities. And they provide state-of-the-art programming that provides a win-win for their employees as well as the employers that they work with. Products they make, plastic totes for a variety of industries throughout the continent. And it could be precision cutting of metal goods, medical goods, production services, can be agricultural items. You'll learn more about that. But the bottom line, it provides opportunities, career opportunities for individuals with disabilities. And this grant, this investment is going to amplify their efforts throughout Minnesota. And for accountability, there'll be a report back to the legislature in January to show what they've learned and to further look at opportunities in the future. Mr. Chair, with that background, it's now an honor to go to my testifiers. And first, Christy Armbruster from the Office Services Section. She's a specialist at MDI.
Christy, thank you, Senator Wieger. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Armbruster.
Thank you. Please
state your name for the record, and then feel free to begin whenever you're ready.
My name is Christy Armbruster. Thank you for supporting MDI in the past. I started working at MDI in 1988 when I was 21 years old, where I started on the assembly floor. My work means a lot to me. I stayed at MDI because I feel comfortable working here. Working at MDI, I get the support I need to help me feel better. I am respected and I have friends. Sometimes I have very low self-esteem, but my new job and career skills has helped me be more confident. In career skills, I learned about accountability. I learned that when you make a mistake, you shouldn't blame I learned that when you make a mistake, you need to take responsibility and not blame someone else for the mistake. I have taken accountability for the mistakes that I have made. I also learned about communications and teamwork. I know that communication can be difficult during challenge conversations, and sometimes I need to pick up the phone instead of sending an email that someone might not understand. Lastly, I want to share what I learned about customer service, professionalism, and confidentiality. On November 7th of 2018, I was promoted to office service specialist. In my new job, I'm the first person that people see when they come in the building. It is important for me and for MDI that people see a person who is happy, It is important for me and for MDI that people see a person who is happy and to give great customer service. There is a video called Give Them a Pickle, which we watched during Career Skills class. It was all about giving customers what they want and having great customer service. During the class, everyone had to give somebody a paper pickle who they thought showed great customer service, and I received two of them. That is what I do every day. In my job, I know I have to be professional and respect the privacy of others. Every day I am positive and professional to people that come to MDI. Some of my other job responsibilities are answering the phones, taking care of customers, timekeeping that is used for payroll and for billing the customers, and distributing the mail and supporting the process that helps flow of paying our bills on time. Every day I work to keep people's information private while I'm doing my job. I love my job because it allows me to advance my skill sets, take on new challenges, and grow as an employee and a person. Real skills and the support of MDI has helped make that happen.
Thank you, Ms. Armbruster. Next, we have Ms. Eglinton. I hope I pronounced that correctly. Please state your name for the record. Please begin when you're ready. Oh, and members, I forgot we do have a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jean Eglinton, and thank you, committee members. Christy's a hard act to follow. I'll just say that right off the bat. I'm the Director of Employment Services at MDI, and I have more than 35 years of experience working with people with disabilities in employment settings. I'm in my eighth year with MDI, and I can tell you MDI's workforce development model works. Our success is attributed to our culture of providing support to employees in a respectful and inclusive environment. Between our licensed day services in Cohasset, Minnesota, and supporting more than 100 employees with varying disabilities at our manufacturing facilities, we are still less than 5% reliant on government funding. MDI has a goal to impact 2,500 lives by 2025. Our vision to make that happen builds on our career skills work that focuses on the soft skills that people need to be successful. And those classes include communication, positive attitude, problem solving, and as Christy said, customer service. Nearly 300 participants have completed a career skills class, and we have had tremendous feedback. 96% of the participants said they were positively impacted by the class. 80% said they are better at problem solving, having taken the class, and 88% said they now show more responsibility for their actions. We know that if our career skills classes help people with disabilities build skills, it can help everyone. We are moving forward with the vision of transforming career skills into new formats to increase impact. As you can imagine, our in-person model was turned on its head due to COVID challenges. By January 2021, we started to offer virtual career skills classes to outside organizations. Virtual career skills classes gave organizations the chance to participate from a remote setting with a trainer in a different location over Zoom. We have been able to reach multiple organizations at the same time using Zoom. The feedback we received from these participating organizations has been great. There is, however, a barrier that exists. The class is offered at specific times and dates. So if that does not work for an organization, they're not able to participate. Therefore, we have expanded our vision of offering career skills in more accessible formats and will be piloting these options in the coming year. First, on-demand career skills, where at the click of your mouse, any group can participate in a recorded class and on the Unified Work Learning platform. Second, mobile career skills, where the class will be brought to more rural parts of the state and offered in person. And finally, we envision the virtual reality classes where participants will be able to wear a set of goggles and, for instance, practice their interviewing skills, as well as future be able to see what it's like to work in a virtual world, like a manufacturing plant, such as MDI, or retail store, convenience store, or office setting. Eric will speak more to our vision of unified work that bring consultation, training, and support to businesses to help them remove barriers and hire more people with disabilities. This concept is a collaboration with organizations and businesses, including Medtronic, Special Olympics Minnesota, United Health Group, and Boston Scientific, who continue to help us create and implement our concept. United Health Group and Boston Scientific have both increased their efforts to hire people with disabilities. Our vision of unified work consulting and career skills training classes encompasses everything we think is needed to advance employment for people with disabilities. Thank you to the committee for your consideration and allowing MDI a bit of time to showcase our employees and our work.
Thank you. Next we have Mr. Black. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and feel free to begin when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Eric Black, the President and CEO of MBI. It's an honor to be here with you today. As my colleague said, we're working on some phenomenal program that we think will enhance the state's ability to increase and bridge this workforce gap. As of today, there's roughly about 300,000 individuals within the state that have a disability but are within employment age. But less than 50% of those individuals are actually actively employed. The unemployment rate for people with disabilities is 3x those without. It's a clear gap that exists. They overcome certain barriers. First off, barrier is training. The second one is around accommodations, transportation, and then workforce culture. So as we looked at how do we expand and impact those people with disabilities, we wanted to focus on programming that not only addressed barriers, but biases. There are many managers, businesses that have biases that comes to actually hiring people with disabilities. We wanted to face that and actually work with them hand in hand to allow them to have the coaching they need to interface with people with disabilities. So it's our honor to actually take our program that we've had for 60 years of actually operating our business and really bring it out to the state. There are underserved communities in greater Minnesota. So our mobile career skills is actually our program where we will actually go outstate and go to employers or people with disabilities and provide the training and development that they need to increase hiring of people with disabilities. We've already had good programming here in the metro area. As Jean spoke, we have a program that offers this on demand. And if we have our on-demand programming, then you're able to receive this training in the snippets, say 15 minutes. It allows you to get to the content at a rate that most people actually have an attention span. So the last one is around virtual reality. So I had the ability when I worked for Cargill previously to really work on the tech side of the business. And one of the things that often hurt us was the ability to deliver services to customers disruptively by price. So our thought today is how do we take our service model and really get it out to the state in a really disruptive manner when we think about the costs, where you don't have one individual training 10 people, or where you need two people to train 20 people. How do we have one individual impacting 100 people, one individual impacting 200 people? And really a lot of the funds that we want to utilize is to develop that platform, which makes it really easy and accessible for people with disabilities. Our cost and goals today, we're less than $20, our drivers to get down to $10 or less. And at that type of service model, your outreach begins to get to a lot of people across the state without the barrier of income and or participation being a true hurdle. I'd like to demonstrate kind of a rough draft of one of our programs to you now. Hopefully Zoom works, screen sharing here. What you see in front of you is a virtual reality of our MDI facility in Cohasset. This video was developed by our team at MDI. And it is to focus on one of the barriers, which is we call workforce safety. There's a huge belief that people with disabilities are actually working are less safe than those without. We have over 200 people with disabilities working for us today. And our statistics say that's not it. It's actually people without disabilities are people who get injured. You're able to go through this model, and one of the things I'll show before I go through it is you're able to take what we would call virtual reality boxes or glasses, put your smartphone in them, and then you would go through this content. Here are glasses that are made by MDI for people with disabilities. The cost here is less than $20. You could buy virtual reality glasses on Amazon for around about $17, but they're, you know, professional, good fitting. or you can get a Google box, which are cardboard boxes for around about $6. So as I go through this content, you can already see that most of the avenues for utilizing it are less than the $20 barrier. Over 80% of people with disability have access to a smartphone. This has increased drastically since 2013, and it'll approach over 90% by 2024. If you look at this, if you had the goggles on and you actually took a look toward this arrow, it would navigate you to another room. As you're looking around, you see spilt milk. If a person was to look at this, there's actually a pop-up. It would be narrated, but I don't want it to get feedback through where you talk through, and it talks about slips, trips, and falls here, giving statistics for the person. If anybody's taken safety training like I have, you sit in a room, you're looking at a video for 30 minutes, wondering. But if you're in a transitionary program and you haven't worked in a manufacturing environment, this could be very helpful in understanding what are some of the safety hazards that one might get involved with if they were in this environment. As Gene spoke about, you know, this is a manufacturing environment. We could do the same thing for Big Box store, where you talked about finding things throughout the aisles. You could visualize, do I need a screwdriver? You look up the screwdriver aisle, you actually go to it. And it's this type of technology that if we can continue to build upon, we think this is just the first sample of what you could really do in the training and development world for people with disabilities. Some of it's on safety. Some of it's actually how you might activate or utilize a fire extinguisher, creating fire safety. And we can integrate videos into this for self-help. So now you have people within transition that are able to see this. We're here mainly representing the population of people with disabilities. Everything we talked about today, though, however, is good for all individuals that could be in transition. People within are looking at workforce development. It could be people coming out of the criminal justice system who are looking at how do they transition back to jobs. So although we make it on purpose for people with disability, the platform could be opened up for a lot of underserved populations here in the city. So with that, I'd like to ask that you consider our bill for this one-time $500,000 appropriation to help us accelerate this, to have a broader impact in our communities, to reach out to employers and actually impact people with disabilities. With that, I'd like to say thank you and take any questions that you might have.
Thank you. And you know, before we get started, I had a chance to tour MDI a couple of weeks ago. Ms. Armbruster, you were the first person I met. It was an awesome, you just set the right tone for the whole tour, and I really appreciated it.
Thank you.
Do we have any questions for our testifiers? So Mr. Black, just real quick, we're looking at $500,000. Is that the total cost of the program, or is that, do you have some private money coming into it as well?
Yeah, some of this will actually be, as MDI said, you know, we make the majority of our monies through our operating business by making the totes that you see here in front of you today. These totes are made by MDI. We make totes for the U.S. Postal Service. So we actually will subsidize the majority cost here. Your dollars will go to accelerating this. Okay. And with those dollars, we can get through our programming a lot quicker, create more content, and be more impactful. So it's our partnership together that'll really make this happen. That said, when people see us putting dollars in, they see the state putting dollars in, it'll make it a lot easier to bring foundations and donors along board to be a part of this.
Well, I know one of the chief concerns that I hear out there is having a hard time finding people to take jobs. And so getting folks ready, the skills they need to be in the workforce is really important for us as we come out of this pandemic recession. So I appreciate the work that you guys are doing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions or comments for our testifiers? Okay, seeing none. Senator Wieger, any closing thoughts?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you to everybody at Minnesota Diversified Industries. You've heard from President Black, who came from Cargill, came recruited from the private sector to continue the leadership of this great company, which with so much social responsibility and reaching out to individuals with disabilities, the partnerships they have with the business community. You heard Medtronic, Boston Scientific, United, the nonprofits. Go to the company's the website and look at the glowing testimonials you heard from Christy and others that share their story. Business persons, look at the board of directors. This is a great partnership. They want to continue with their goal to provide hope, opportunity for more individuals with disabilities, and it's a win-win for them as well as employers. So it's a great investment, $500,000. It's going to yield much higher returns. I urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Wieger. Senate File 3559 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you all for coming today. We appreciate it. Next, we have Senator Dietzick and Senate File 2505. Welcome to the committee, Senator Dietzick. Feel free to begin whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for hearing Senate File 2505. This is a bill to provide Accessibility Inc. funding to train former incarcerated individuals. Accessibility Inc. works to connect their clients with resources and give them the skills to successfully integrate into their community. They collaborate with educators, local businesses, and other service providers to help people become self-sufficient. With me today to support the bill, we have Ben Austin, Chief Programs Officer. Jackie Gale, who's sitting over there, is Senior Director of People Practices, if we have questions. We have Ebony Mary Peary, and she is the Reentry Basic Education Coordinator. And Gerald Exum, and he is, a client, or former client of Accessibility Inc. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I'll ask to turn it over to Mr. Austin to continue discussing Accessibility Inc.
Thank you, Senator Dietzick. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Austin. Please just state your name for the record. Feel free to begin when you're ready.
Ben Austin. I'll start by thanking Chairperson Pratt and the rest of the committee for having us here, the opportunity to ask you for money. So with that, I'll give you just kind of a brief overview of the program. The mission of Accessibility is an organization. We serve a wide variety of individuals with barriers to employment, including individuals with intellectual developmental disabilities. But this specific program, Project Connect, was developed in 1997 and initially served predominantly recent immigrants and refugees who were in need of services to get gainfully employed in the community. Changes in revenues and funding sources available over the course of time have kind of evolved into the program now, where we serve predominantly justice impacted individuals, 60% of whom are people of color. And I'll get into maybe some more information as far as data and stuff, if you know, you're looking for that. But throughout our existence, we've served anywhere from 50 to 400 people, pending what financial resources have been available. Over the last reporting period of the last direct appropriation we've gotten, it cost us around $1,850 per person to put them through our program. So based on that, that number, I would anticipate 170 to 175 people we could impact with this appropriation. And throughout the last reporting period, our recidivism rate was 3.5%, which is pretty significant as far as keeping people gainfully employed and not back in, you know, the justice system. So unless you guys have any questions for me right now, I'll turn it over to Gerald, and he can share his story of going through this actual program.
Thank you, Mr. Austin. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Exum. Please state your name for the record, and feel free to begin when you're ready.
Hi, I'm Jerry Exum, and I'd like to thank Chairman Senator Pratt and the rest of the committee for having me here today. I grew up in a small town in Northwest Indiana called Gary, and it was growing up in Gary was pretty nice in the beginning. We had the steel mills, which was our main resource there, and steel mill was pretty much our lifeline at that time. You know, the business flourished, but one day the Mills just decided to pack up and leave and move to Texas. And at that point, everything just went awry. You know, as the unemployment rate skyrocketed, so did crime. And it became not such a good place to live at the time. My dad and two of my brothers retired from Minden Steel. But during that time, my dad was laid off for quite some time. And so you can imagine the stress and the difficulties within the home, just as a result of that. My mom being a substitute school teacher, making hardly enough money to put food on the table. And so things got really bad. You know, my dad, who was a guy that I really looked up to and inspired to be like as a kid, now I watched him become a bitter, angry, abusive father, both verbally and physically. And so make a long story short, just to get out of that situation, and in 1980, I ended up joining the U.S. Army, serving a year and a half in West Germany. Basically did that as a way of escape. And so spent time there. That didn't last as long as I hoped. I suffered an injury while on duty. So I'm a disabled vet now. Have to come back to depressed Gary. And things just kind of got worse from there. Eventually got strung out on drugs and alcohol. That was my go-to to sort of medicate the pain and the trauma of just everything that was going on. And so fast forward, I moved to Minnesota in 1991, still on the same destructive pattern. But then one day in May the 7th of 1992, after a week-long binge, alcohol and drugs, I woke up one day and just the craving was gone. I had no more desire for it. And I checked into the what was the Beacon program at the Salvation Army at 1010 Curry, and stayed off the drugs for a very long time, all the way up into the late 2000s. But then my behavior eventually landed me in the prison. I did an extensive prison sentence and came back and relapsed after all of those years. And then I checked into Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge, did their long-term program. And some of the people there told me about a program called Accessibility. And so I got a call from a gentleman named Stan Hill and went in and went through the interview process and, did the testing, the OSHA testing. And that's where I met Ebony, who, kind of helped me, kind of walked me through the prep for the test and everything. And so just to briefly share my experience with accessibility, I honestly can't say enough about the difference that they've made in my life. And, I'm not going to get emotional here, but, I was a guy that with not much direction coming out of prison, didn't know what I was going to do. My family was pretty much torn apart because I was gone for almost 5 years. And, people grow apart after a period of time. So I went to accessibility, not knowing what to expect. But immediately when I walked in the door, it was, they treat you like family. And I think what struck me the most was just their hands-on approach. You go in and it wasn't like that, here's the test, study that, do this, and, let us know when you're done. No, it was, do you have any questions? You need some coffee, and just a really professional organization. And I'm internally grateful for them. And thank you, Mr. Chairman, for having me here today.
Well, thank you, Mr. Exum. Thank you for your service.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
And thank you for sharing your story. It's a powerful story. And I think it shows a lot of strength and character that you've been able to bounce back a couple of times. And congratulations on your success now.
Absolutely. And again, you know, accessibility played an intricate part in that recovery, you know, because it allowed me to have a plan coming out of adult and teen challenge that I wouldn't have otherwise had. Mm-hmm. And so again, you know, I'm just grateful for that opportunity.
Okay. Sorry about that, Mr. Axel. We're listening. We do like to have a little fun here in the Senate once in a while. Do we have any questions for our testifiers? Okay. Well, seeing none, I've been out to Accessibility Inc. as well, and I know you guys are doing some really good work out there. Maybe you can talk about some of your success rates and what you've been able to accomplish over the last few years.
Yeah, so as far as during the most recent reporting period, we served a total of 102 people, with 89 of them completing vocational non-credential training and then earned certificates. Most of those certificates are, you know, OSHA, forklift certifications, different kinds of training that we put the individuals through. Enter deployment at exit was at 54 people at an average of 1609 an hour during that time. So the 2021, you know, our data there was better than 2020 when COVID first hit. Our numbers were pretty poor. Let's just put it that way. So, I mean, we couldn't even have people come in for trainings as a group. We had to do everything individualized for the most part. So, but in 2021, we had 85 total participants. The target was 60. Total exits to employment that year was 43. Our target was 39. The credentials obtained was 61 that year, a target of 60. Improving basic education was 61, the target of 60. Vocational skills improvement was 61 at a target of 60. So we exceeded the targets for the year 2021. And those are determined between kind of DEED and us after an appropriation is approved. And we have to kind of come together and meet with them and come up with an exact plan and targets and things like that. So over the course of the last year and this year have been much better. So.
Okay. Any other questions? Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to add to the chair's thanks to Mr. Exum for being here and telling your story.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you having me.
I'm really grateful to have a chance to actually hear your experience and get a chance to meet you. So thanks for being here.
Yes, sir.
I did have a question for Mr. Austin, if I may, please. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about the sort of geographic scope of the work that you do? Are you primarily or exclusively within the cities, or are there opportunities for you to work outside the cities as well? And in that context too, in addition, like the sort of businesses that you work with and where you place people.
Mm-hmm. And I can, are you finished?
Yeah,
cut you off. Totally. Okay.
Yeah, cut me off too. That's good. That's all right.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. We do service almost exclusively the metro area. We do placements all over St. Paul, Minneapolis, and the surrounding communities. And Stan, who Gerald had referenced, Stan Hill is one of our employees, and he predominantly does community outreach with businesses to find job opportunities and those things. He's unfortunately not able to be here. We would have liked him to, but I think Ebony can speak more to what he does and that part of it as far as the businesses in the community. Right quick before then, that isn't to say that we can't expand and kind of get further out and to impact people that, you know, because that's always a concern is, you know, in the cities, there's resources and more available than, you know, in the outlying regions. So there's something we could, you know, consider in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Austin. I want to be clear that why I asked is I want you to ask for twice as much money and move out to St. Cloud.
Okay.
That's why
I asked. I mean, hey, if we can get the funding, we'll look at anything. I'm not lying.
Senator Johnson Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions. So first to Mr. Austin, your recidivism rate is very low. Can you explain some of the best practices you use to continue with that low rate?
Well, I think a big part of it is the employment part, actually getting gainful employment. Now, another part of that is that that's during our reporting period. What happens after that, you know, we don't really know.
That's, I didn't hear what you said. What did you
say? It's during our reporting period that the funds are designated for. After that, we don't know if somebody may, you know, have something happen or not.
What is the reporting period?
The period of 2020 to 2022 with our last director of recreation.
Okay. Mr. Chair, can I clarify? So they did get a an earlier direct grant from DEED, and so the reporting period is, so they were kind of tracking people while they were working with them, and then, you know, with a lot of companies, once they, you know, get a job and, you know, move on and graduate, they don't keep track. That is, you know, maybe something that if the committee thought was necessary, they could kind of work to keep track of people just to know going forward what helps. But that's just kind of what the original grant was.
Thank you, Senator. I have another question.
Senator Johnson Stewart, go ahead.
So is there a trick to these outlets? Because I can't get my plug into here. And I'm about to die and I want to keep looking at your website. So thank you if somebody could help me.
I think one of our pages is on our way to hell.
Like, it keeps arcing. I'm afraid I'm going to die in committee hearing. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's all I have.
I can't get it to plug in.
Okay. Any other questions for our testifiers?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Herr, I'm sorry, I didn't see your hand up. Go ahead.
I just want to comment and support Accessibility Inc. and Senator Dietzer for bringing forth and to testify, being that they're an organization that began helping refugees and immigrants, and I'm a former refugee myself, so that really meant a lot to me for their work in the past and transition to help folks that are coming back to society and be productive. So I just want to note that in. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Herr. Well, like I mentioned on the last bill, you know, getting people back into the workforce is probably the biggest challenge we have right now. So appreciate the work you're doing. And Senator Dietzick, any closing comments?
I was going to mention that you said on the last bill that, you know, that is a big barrier. There's hiring signs everywhere. And I think Accessibility Inc. does a good job. They actually help the people. They help Minnesota businesses because they partner with these businesses to get people working for them. And that helps our Minnesota economy. So, you know, thank you for letting me highlight this company. And thank you for hearing the bill. And I ask for your support.
And I'm sorry, Ms. Mary Puri, I noticed you moved into the chair. Did you want to add anything to the testimony today?
Yes, I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members for having us. My name is Ebony Mary Puri, and I am Accessibility's adult basic education instructor. And so when we have incoming participants come into our program, we have a week-long orientation where they will do a test for adult basic education, which is a TABE test, and I determine their grade levels, and then I'll work with them on what their educational goals are. So we have some participants coming into our program that do not have a GED, and so their plan is to obtain their GED. So I will work with them on a plan for doing that based on their TABE scores. We have other participants that come into our program that do have their GED, but maybe they need to take a placement test or an ACCUPLACER for continuing education. So I can also work with them on those skills. I also work with participants on developing a resume. For some participants, it's the first resume they've written. Other participants are bringing their resumes in and we are updating it and adding their new skills and certifications that they're earning through our program. Another thing that we do is, as Gerald mentioned, we provide OSHA training. So they will go through OSHA 10 during that first week of orientation. So I'm also there with them to help with the end of module quizzes and the final test. So typically when our participants leave orientation. They've written a resume. They've obtained their OSHA 10 certification. Most of our participants will also go through forklift certification, scissor lift certification. And as Gerald mentioned, we do have Stan Hill. He does our job skills training with all of our participants, and he works on building community relationships with employers so that he can place our participants into community employment. And then they also work with another staff person named Linda, who's also not here, but she will help them with self-assessments and budgets. And so our goal is when participants go through orientation that they continue to work with us, and we continue to work with them on job skills training, employment services, education services, and we stay in connect with them like Gerald.
Thank you. Okay, seeing no additional questions, thank you all for your time. Senator Desick, thank you for bringing this bill forward. We're going to go ahead and lay Senate File 2505 on the table for possible inclusion. Thank you all, and thank you to your testifiers for coming today.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you again, Chairman Brett and the committee.
Next, we have Senator Housley with Senate File 3097.
Oh, wait, somebody's phone's here. Oh, Carrie, I think it's yours.
Okay. Senator Housley, please feel free to begin whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 3097 is in front of you. I'd like to thank my co-authors, Senator Champion, Senator Herr, and Senator Mark Johnson. Senator Champion has been working on the Neighborhood Development Center almost as long as I have. NDC's mission is to empower entrepreneurs and community partners to transform their low-income neighborhood economies from within. NDC's vision believes concentrated poverty needs concentrated opportunity. NDC helps people open businesses by addressing economic disparities and inequities for low-income individuals and families, primarily Black, Indigenous, and people of color in disinvested neighborhoods. The Neighborhood Development Center has a 29-track record in connecting low-income and minority entrepreneurs to the opportunities needed for success. Today, there are 437 businesses operating in the metropolitan area, employing 3,250 people. NDC manages 5 small business incubators in Minneapolis and St. Paul, which are home to 129 businesses. And Senator Pratt, many of us on this committee have toured them, and it's super exciting. We're gonna hear from some of those folks coming up. These incubators provide entrepreneurs with permanently affordable commercial space, plus access to NDC's business services along key commercial corridors. These incubators help them to start and grow their businesses through training, lending, and tech assistance. I won't go into any more details because there's a lot more and we have some testifiers, but the bill is requesting $9.5 million in fiscal year 2023, and that's broken down. You can see it in your packet, in your sheet there. And I'd like to introduce NDC President Renee Dossman and NDC founder and CEO Mike Tamale to testify, and they will introduce you to an entrepreneur who we visited before. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Housley. Any preference on who goes first?
I'm going to go first.
All right. Welcome back to the committee, Ms. Dossman. Please state your name for the record and feel free to begin when you're ready.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman Pratt. Renee Dossman. Thank you to the committee, President of the Neighborhood Development Center. I wanted to start out in gratitude. I need to be on camera.
Yes.
As if I'm not used to it by now. I just wanted to start off with gratitude for all of you, for your support of NDC, for coming out. to visit our new space. We would encourage anybody that's interested to come and visit us. We're right on the corner of University and Dale, and that is our most recent incubator. It will have a coffee shop on the bottom from an entrepreneur that's going to do youth entrepreneurship as well as being an entrepreneur herself. She's going to be teaching Black youth how to become entrepreneurs. And then we have another business that's going to be in that same space. Her name is Joyce Sanders, and she has Urban 29, and her business was burned down during the uprising. And so she's going to be in our space as well. But we would encourage anybody to come and visit. And we just want to thank you, to be honest with you, for your support of NDC. We're trying to do some things to move the needle in a different way. And Mike's going to give you a little bit more detail about that, the makings of the bill, and why we're asking, as that gentleman mentioned earlier, why we're asking for money. But I'll just highlight a little bit more about what Senator Housley mentioned about NDC. So it starts off with training and really getting the entrepreneur set up to be able to have a business plan and to be able to do business, right? Because if you think about NDC, we've contributed over $10 million in the businesses have in state income taxes and created over 3,000 jobs. So in order to do that, you need to have a sound business plan. Then we provide that entrepreneur with technical assistance or business development, right? So you can have a great idea, a great business plan, but you might need someone to help you set up your business properly, to do your accounting and your bookkeeping. And so when I think about some of the things that we've done as a result of COVID and the pandemic and everything else, we did technical assistance, a tech pack, because we found that some of our entrepreneurs that we support, so 88% of the entrepreneurs we support are people of color, low to lowest income entrepreneurs in the metro. We focus on the 10 geographic lowest income areas in the metro, including Brooklyn Park and Brooklyn Center. And then we also do some work across the state, which Mike will be talking about, as well as nationally with our Build From Within Alliance. So you need some technical assistance. So we provide that for the entrepreneurs. So we noticed that our entrepreneurs could not access, as you guys are well aware, you've heard the story, they couldn't access the PPPs fast enough. They didn't have their paperwork pulled together. They might not have had the technology. So we started that. We also started a program, to be honest with you, for their mental wellness. Because when you think about the entrepreneurs, you got to think about the whole person, not just the business side. And we recognize that that was a need. So there's one-on-one therapy and sessions for the entrepreneurs, as well as group training. And then we also started a program in conjunction with the Lake Street Council called Money Matters. With everything that happened, we discovered that some of our entrepreneurs did not have proper insurance, might not have had their books straight. So this Money Matters was actually specifically for along that Lake Street corridor. So we're rolling that program out. And then our most recent program, which I'm super excited about, which we're starting, is called BLOCK. And that is Black Latina Opportunity to Connect. So what we found is great. We have, you know, over 50% of the entrepreneurs we support are Black. And we found that they might have done our training, but they might not have made it through to do technical assistance, or they might not have made it through to do to actually start their business, right? So we recognize that they need a little bit more support and a little bit more mentoring. So we're working on that program as well, specifically for Black Latina women, to get them to start their businesses. So those are just a few of the things that we've started and that we've been working on with everything that's happened. And I just want you to know that it would not have been possible without our most recent appropriation and your support. And we're extremely grateful for that. And I'll turn it over to my buddy.
Thank you, Ms. Dossman. Welcome back to the committee. Mr. Tamale, please state your name for the record and feel free to begin when you're ready.
My name is Mike Tamale. I'm the founder of Neighborhood Development Center. Thank you for having us here and for your support over many years and for coming out and walking the avenues with us. Coming in, meeting some of our amazing entrepreneurs, appreciate that a lot because they tell the story much better than we do, to be honest. So the things we're asking for in this bill are complementary to what you've been supporting us with in the past. And that includes our slow but steady work in Greater Minnesota, where we've been building capacity in right now about five different communities to replicate this kind of a model in their own community. And we're not going out there and doing the training or lending of entrepreneurs. We're trying to build up the community itself and their ability to take on this model for their own economic development. So that includes efforts up in Duluth and Brainerd, St. Cloud, Lower Sioux Indian community, and with the Mille Lacs band within Onamia and Hinckley. So one of the things we're asking for here today is some funding to support potential business incubator development in some of those communities. And we don't have specific projects yet. We've been talking with them. And we would use the funding if we could get that for purposes of helping them plan, but actually invest and implement some business incubators in their own community to do what we do here in the Twin Cities. We have about five or six business incubators of our own. Renee mentioned the one of them at University in Dale. We actually have two of them there. We have a contractor incubator that's over on the east side of St. Paul for small contractors. And then we have the Midtown Global Market in the old Sears building at Lake in Chicago. And we've been highly involved in the Mercado Central over the years at Lake in Bloomington as well. So these incubators are where folks can have a long-term affordable space for their business, but also access all of our services for training and financing and technical assistance. So that's why we are really high in those. They also hold the corner, you might say, or they're in key, highly visible locations in their own communities. A big thing that we've always had in our model is trying to have these folks that we can touch inspire their entire community. We're trying to sort of help re-inject entrepreneurship into the middle of these communities and get literally thousands of people believing that they too can start a business, employ their neighbors, employ their kids, teach the kids how to be the next generation entrepreneur, and so on. So the incubators are a big part of that. And the other piece of this is a loan capital. So to go along with the training and the technical assistance, we basically believe there's not a lot of point in training people if they can't get financing. And by nature of who we're reaching out to connect with and train, for the most part, they're low to very low income folks. They don't have much in the way of equity. They don't have much typically in the way of actually having run a business before. So we're taking them from, you know, a skill that they have and a passion that they have, but right from the very beginning to learn the basics. But then we have to be able to finance them because banks are not going to touch them for probably 2 to 4 years once they're in business. So our idea is to get them on the economic ladder, get them moving up to become bankable. But we do the first one or two loans to them. 100% of who we finance are non-bankable when they start with us. But the bulk of them end up being bankable over time. Our default rate historically is down around 2%. In 2020, we were just under 5%, and that was the year of the pandemic, and that didn't help anybody, obviously. And we don't know our default rate for last year, but we think it's probably a little lower than that, actually. So these are real loans, these are real businesses, but the reason that they succeed is, number one, their own passion and their own abilities, but number two, they get help from us every step of the way, all sorts of professional help in any way you can imagine, really. Legal, accounting, setting up a restaurant, mental health, as Renee mentioned, et cetera. So that's kind of in a nutshell, the two parts of what we're trying to find here is more ability to do small business lending and real estate lending and build out some incubators here in the Twin Cities and in greater Minnesota. So with that, Senator Pratt, if we can see if our virtual link works to get one of the entrepreneurs that took the training up in Brainerd, Minnesota through the Initiative Foundation, which is one of our partners, Sean Hopman of Ya Sure Kombucha. I don't know if he's on or not, but this is his moment to shine.
I'm here.
All right.
Hey, Sean.
Awesome. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Hopman. Please state your name for the record, and then you can feel free to begin when you're ready.
All right. I'm Sean Hopman. I own Yasher Kombucha up in Brainerd, Minnesota. As it was stated, I was part of the, we called it the Enterprise Academy, which was one of the pilot business training classes Just real quick, a little about my business. We're right in historic downtown Brainerd. We have a full tap room, just like a beer brewery. We are completely non-alcoholic. We make everything from scratch. Our kombucha is made from scratch. We make homemade or made from scratch ginger beer, homemade root beer, many different things to reach a wider audience. I started the company back in 2019, and I kind of started it as a side hustle, and it just started to grow. And as it grew, I was needing more space, and so I began to rent space from a local brewery. We worked in there through most of 2020, and in the fall of 2020, I began the Enterprise Academy and started to go through the business training that they had, which was awesome because I was new to business ownership. And through the process of that, I was able to secure a loan to purchase my own building. And we bought the building downtown, opened the tap room, expanded our brewery. The business class for me was incredible because it took everything from idea to brick and mortar and showed us the whole process of everything that I needed to do. Also helped out in securing that bank loan so that we could purchase our building. Upon graduating from that, we also were able to get a loan through the Initiative Foundation to purchase some more equipment to up our production, since our production was taking off more and more. So we got through all of that and then got open. And the really cool thing is that the really cool thing about all of it is it doesn't just stop there. It doesn't stop once we open our business. We have had alumni meetings where, you know, everything from there was a meeting just to go through how to use QuickBooks and how to weigh out, do I buy the online version? Do I buy the hard copy version? Just all these great little things I've had. Anytime I've had questions, they've been available to help me through the process of running this business. And which has been a huge, huge, awesome part of our success, because I have lots of questions when it comes to business. So having that resource has just been amazing.
Do we have any questions for our testifiers? So You've got the new building on Dale, and I had a chance to meet your two entrepreneurs, and both fantastic people, a lot of passion around what they do. It sounded like one was a startup, one was, as you mentioned, was one that just needed to find a new place for her business. Have you done the real estate lending to help entrepreneurs buy their business, or? I'm not remembering that piece of your business, and maybe is that something that you've been doing, or is that a new component?
You know, since I've been there, it's starting, right? Because what we're hearing from the entrepreneurs is that that's a trend for them. That's something that they want. And we've just recently did a deal for that for the real estate in partnership with the MMCDC. To provide funds for us to do some real estate lending. But it's, you know, we know that there's funds that are coming down for this, but there's not enough to hit and to focus on the entrepreneurs that we support. We could go into the details of all of that, but in general, we know that there's a need, and we're gonna need a little bit of help using some of these funds to help with the technical assistance for those, because it is something, to your point, that we're getting used to and doing, but because we've done real estate on our side and development, we've been helping, but we know that there's more entrepreneurs that have this need. We have a pipeline, a list of entrepreneurs that are waiting to get some assistance.
And Senator Pratt, the way it's likely to work in most cases is that we'd be part of a loan package that we would help put together, and we'd subordinate typically to maybe a bank in the first position, and bring in, you know, maybe a quarter million, 300,000, something in that size. And so that can then leverage bank financing, maybe other programs, but typically it's going to be a bank in first position.
Thank you. Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And when you, with your incubator locations, and as people come in and set up their business, do you have a timeline that they're allowed to be there? Or are there somewhere once they're established there that they kind of need to remain? How does that work with different types of businesses using the incubators?
That's a great question. And I know that term incubator can kind of throw people off because now people are using accelerator and all kinds of things. But for us, like if you take the Midtown Global Market, which is our largest incubator that we've had for 15 years, there's people that have been in that market for, in that incubator for 15 years. So we kind of go we kind of meet the entrepreneur where they are. And if you think about like the business Losa Compost that's in that, they've went from that spot to open up like 7 other restaurants. So what we find is a lot of the times is that they might open up another location. So there's a gentleman in there that owns Andy's Garage. He was in there and now he has another location in Uptown. And so that's typically what we see in our incubators.
And Mr. Chair, to add to what she just said, the previous testifier for Senator Dietzick's bill, Jerry Exum, over there, he also went through this training class too. And so he's going to open his coffee shop. And then, of course, Renee, he's going to open a bunch more, right?
There you go. That's the plan.
Thought I'd add that. It's Jerry's day.
Any other questions for our testifiers? Okay,
we'll see. Mr.
Chair. Sorry, Senator Hur.
Yes, you. That's okay. That's okay. I just want to make a comment in support of NDC here, and thank Senator House Lee for letting me be a co-author of the bill. I have seen many progress that has been led by NDC, and at some point was critical about their service as well, you know, and you know that's how we go, that's how we progress together, you know, is an ebb and flow, you know. And so I know that I'm not gonna make a statement in terms of pat myself in the back, but you know, 2 years ago when we're struggling with the COVID-19 impacting, you know, our community, small business, micro business, and we had discussion in here where I proposed, you know, small funding for the culture mall, and was a little faced some struggling and getting through, but it's because NDC that have the understanding of that and of that venue and how many vendors were left out, especially those who are have less than one employees. And I'm glad that, you know, we have, they came out to testify in support of my initiative. So it's only fair for me to also, you know, lend a hand when they needed to. And it's more critical during this time as we coming back, recovering from the down economy, you know, our retail is still struggling and we really need NDC to help connect people like they always have, you know, on, you know, in my district, Payne Avenue was still struggling, and I know Mr. Tamale know how to work with business along those business on along the, our Main Street corridors, and I'm you know, in full support of that. They will make good use of the funding that we appropriate here. So again, thank you, Senator Housley, and also Mike Tamale and Ms. Dossman for coming to testify.
Thank you, Senator Hurd. Before we go to Senator Housley for last comments, I just wanted to go back to Mr. Hopman. So you're in your third year of your business. How's it going? How does the growth curve look? What's your projections? Are you Are you off and running? I love the name of the place, by the way.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we're doing great. We're on the verge of another big growth spurt, and I've already bought more equipment to up my production probably two or three times in the last year. So things are looking really good. We're on the front end. Kombucha is actually one of the largest growing beverage industries in the world right now, and we're kind of really on the front end of things. So it was a little bit of a risk going into business being on that far on the front end, but yeah, all this helped so much. So
thank you. Senator Housley, any closing comments?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering what was the genesis behind Mr. Hopman's kombucha, I don't want to call it a brewery, but business. I didn't catch the name.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, sure. Okay. Kombucha. Okay, yeah, sure.
And Senator Coleman gave me my first kombucha last week.
And you're so hooked.
I'm hooked.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, sure you are.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to listen to this bill. It's a great organization, and they've had success through the funding the state has given them over the last few years. So I think it would be great if we could continue to do that. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Housley. Thank you to all our testifiers. Senate file 3097 is going to be laid over for possible inclusion. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Our last bill for the day is Senate file 3342, Senator Housley and Summit Academy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before you is Senate file 3342, and thanks for the opportunity to listen to this one too. This bill would continue to expand the incredible work being done by Summit Academy OIC. Summit Academy is a leader in workforce development in the Twin Cities. Here they come. Here comes my peeps. Come on in. Sit down. Summit Academy is a leader in workforce development in the Twin Cities, training and educating adults each year with marketable skills in healthcare, building trades, and construction and IT, along with a 10-week GED program. Summit Academy students attend without paying any out-of-pocket tuition or student loans. Students participate in a 20-week training program that prepares them for the workforce. Summit Academy is again taking action and leadership in the moment by launching a virtual network to bring their employment, placement, and STEM programs to all Minnesotans through an in-person and virtual statewide network. With that, I'd like to introduce Louis King, CEO and President of OIC America, and Leroy West, President of Summit Academy. In addition, we have some testimony after that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Housley. Welcome back to the committee, Mr. King. Please state your name for the record and feel free to begin when you're ready.
Thank you, Chairman Pratt, members of the committee, and thank you, Senator Housley. By the way, she's my senator. I live in Washington County and proud to be here. I am still the CEO of Summit for the time being, and Leroy's like Tamale, who is my mentor. It's really good to see him and hero after all these years. This is really good to, number one, see all of you and to hear us discussing this important matter of putting Minnesotans to work. And we're interested in St. Cloud, frankly. Our virtual network is all about finding forgotten people and sometimes forgotten places. We no longer have any people to throw away in the United States of America. We no longer have a labor surplus. We have a labor shortage. And as the father of three daughters, one who's in college now and two are out, and my middle daughter couldn't even buy a house because of the debt. And it's just stifling some of the young kids out there. And to be able to help people help themselves in 20 weeks, get them into positions that pay anywhere from $40,000 to $60,000 a year with no out-of-pocket costs. That's the way we're going to get it done, because America works when Americans work together. And I'm proud to be here with Leroy West, the new president of Summit, who's been with us for over 18 years, to share with you some of our program details, outcomes, and future outlooks. And thank you for your support.
Thank you. Welcome back to the committee, Mr. West. Please state your name for the record and feel free to begin when you're ready.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I want to also thank you for allowing me to provide an overview of some of the Academy's program and how we're impacting the lives of the people we touch. I'm gonna walk you through a PowerPoint presentation to really outline who we are and what we do and how we're touching the lives of others. Next slide. We are an accredited vocational institution that serves over 1,000 students annually. We're also licensed through the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. Summit is also one of the largest women and minority construction training providers in the region. Our current specialties are electrician, carpentry, and in solar and construction. In addition, we train in healthcare and our newly launched IT program that focuses on cybersecurity, application development, and service desk. The building you see on this slide is our campus in North Minneapolis on Plymouth and Penn. We have over 17,000 square feet of training space where we house our IT. And as you can see, the number of employers that are listed on there, we engage them early because they're very critical to the success of our training program. Next slide. Slide 2 shows the matriculation model, or as we call it, the path to the middle class. A student enters our education and training phase that is 20 weeks in length, and they're gaining the skills that they need for employment. We have a student support fund that helps students overcome barriers to completing the program. And also during our weeks 18 to 20, students participate in on-the-job training where many of them find employment. Our average household income is $21,600 for students who starts our training. And our average placement wage is $40,000 upon completion. So in 20 weeks, we can take someone from $21,600 to $40,000 in 20 weeks with no out-of-pocket costs. And let's assume someone else in the household making at least $15 an hour, now they're at $70,000 a year. The career management phase kicks in after that, as we call it life after summit or after the training. This is where employer training, continuing education, alumni support, all the inputs it takes to basically lifting those career aim points to getting someone now earning higher skills and higher salaries. So it is by design that we engage employers and community colleges on the front end of our training to align our curriculum and employers' expectation, because we are an accredited institution. And that way students can now transfer, and we have some articulation agreements with 2-year and 4-year institutions where they can continue their education and move forward as well. Next slide. This is who we serve. Our demographics, we have about 78% of students of color, with 49% are Black, and 57% comes from Hennepin County, and 23% from Ramsey County. Next slide. Our employment outcomes by program. So you see the construction. We have our construction placements are 118 year to date with an average wage of $20.86 an hour, and 99% are placed in the field in which they were trained. We have 79 IT graduates year to date with an average placement of $20.52. And we have a growing, if we look at our IT program, we have 79 students that were placed. We started back in fiscal year 19 with one program. We're now offering 3 programs, which includes our cybersecurity program and our application development. And that program is growing to rival the construction program. So we're seeing that growth and their placement is growing considerably. We also have our healthcare placements year to date 44. We placed 44 with an average placement of 1860 an hour. Next slide. We have a plan to grow enrollment to 2,000 students annually and completing 1,340, but we're also looking at putting 932 people to work. That's about 70% of the people we who complete our program. As you can see the growth, fiscal year 19, we were at 989. Then the pandemic hit, we stabilized. We basically constrict our growth. Because of the pandemic, we couldn't bring everybody back in, so we had to transition to virtually. So we couldn't bring everybody in-person seating. Now we're in a position to grow, and we have a plan to get to 2,000 students and put 932 people to work. Next slide. One of our plans to grow is our growth strategy to 2000 is where we plan to connect our low-income communities and our in-demand, high-wage IT occupations. This is a virtual academy where we will be reaching out to communities of color, metro-wide, connecting them and bringing programs to them. In the past, there were students who were living East Side, St. Paul, and they have to take three buses in order to get to Summit, okay? We can eliminate that. We can come to you. We can bring program to you and bring the training to you. We can connect with the local communities as well and different community partners where they have inroads and access to a lot of the students that we can't touch. But now through them, we can touch many more. And that's the intent, and that's how we will get there. Next slide. So not only locally, but we're also looking at statewide as well. So we also have a plan to not only reach metro-wide, but also statewide so we can have that same concept. We can come to you and be able to train in high-tech and high-demand areas. So we're working with places like Bemidji, and we can continue to, work in different places as well. However, but can you imagine right now, we're working with Bemidji, be able to launch a cybersecurity training and train them in 20 weeks, and they can be employed by somebody here in the Twin Cities and work remotely. That's our new plan. Next slide. We have our student success. We have a lot of students that come from all walks of life, and people come to us with the desire to work and the desire to change your lives. And what they're interested in is taking care of themselves and their families. And we have many stories, and here is three. We will have someone to share a testimony coming up. But this is who we are, and this is what we do. And we have many stories like the three that you are seeing on the slide here. Next slide. So in closing, Summit has had a great partnership with this with the state, and we're asking you to continue that investment. Our plan is to enroll the 2,000 students and place over 900 graduates and jobs annually, which is a great return on their investment. We have a proven training model, and we've demonstrated the success. That concludes my presentation, unless the committee has any questions.
Thank you, Mr. West. Senator Johnson Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to our testifiers. It's good to see you again. I have two questions. When I was teaching at Dunwoody, Summit was affiliated with Dunwoody. Is Summit still affiliated with Dunwoody?
No, Summit is not affiliated with Dunwoody. In the past, what we've done, we had a relationship we had a partnership with them to train in plumbing. Mm-hmm. And what we've did, we in our 20-week model, 10 weeks they come to Summit, and the remaining 10 weeks we partnered with Dunwoody and they participated in their 20-week plumbing. So it was more of a customized training that was customized to Summit's accreditation model.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One other question. You mentioned that some of your students are able to go on to 2 and 4-year degrees. In a 20-week program, how many credits would a typical student earn?
That all depends on the institution and that they're transferring to. We have articulation agreements with Hennepin County, and it all depends on the program. The program and the classes, because they have to look at what classes and what content and transfer and how many credits does that take. So it's all program specific.
Is there a range?
Well, in our program, a student will come away with 30 credit hours. So it could range 5 to 10. Again, this all depends. There are certain classes that just transfer, and some of them don't.
Thank you. We still have two more testifiers. We have Mr. Parker and Ms. Morris. Welcome to the committee. Mr. Parker, I have you up first, so please state your name for the record and feel free to begin when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Bill Parker. I'm on the board of Summit Academy. I've been on the board for 6 years. I'm retired. I retired 3 years ago after 34 years at U.S. Bank in Minneapolis. I think you're all aware. I've talked about the tight labor market, the workforce shortage, but part of that shortage is matching up skills with the jobs available. Leroy talked about the new information technology and cybersecurity programs. I think those are especially notable because they require specific training that we've worked very closely with corporations in the Twin Cities, specifically as an example, Atomic Data and U.S. Bank, to help design those programs. So in the U.S. Bank case, after the students successfully completed those programs, U.S. Bank hired 6 of the IT people in entry-level IT programs. And they paid $65,000 a year for those 6 positions. So that was pretty remarkable. So we continue to look to expand this type of activity with the other corporations in the Twin Cities. And we've certainly gotten a lot of interest in that. So I want to thank you for the past support that you've given us and look forward to a continued partnership with the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Parker. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Morris. Please state your name for the record and feel free to begin when you're ready.
Yeah, my name is Angel. Just a quick background on me. I'm actually from Iowa. I was in foster care, kind of bounced around quite a bit. When I was about 17, you know, they said, hey, you should probably go to college. So I did, and I just didn't do well. I wasn't prepared at all. It was interesting, to say the least. So I took a few years off and just worked. I got really invested in landscaping. I was a foreman for quite a few years, about 4.5 years. So kind of got used to that, but it wasn't really what I wanted. And I have family that lives up here. My adopted family lives up here. So I moved up here to, you know, kind of be closer to them. And I came across Summit, and I mean, at first I thought it was just schooling, you know, as like, you know, free school, whatever, that's awesome. But, you know, going through the program and graduating and completing it, it was more than school. One thing that's always stuck with me, one of the professors would always say to me every day, confidence, young lady. And, you know, that's something that they're not going to teach you in school. It doesn't matter what school you go to. No one's going to teach you confidence, you know, so, and I tell myself that all the time. But I ended up going through the IT program, and I got a job in IT. I'm continuing my education now, but I have that under my belt on my resume. So that's awesome. And now I can just focus on my studies. So I'm really excited. Summit has impacted my life in more than just an educational way. So, yeah.
Thank you. Do we have any questions for our testifiers? So Ms. Morris, it says here you're at Atomic Data. When did you start the program? When did you graduate?
I started in 2020 and I graduated, 2021, COVID was weird, right? But yeah, so I went through that and then I started working, I think it was just 2 months after that, pretty much right away. And I just recently decided to focus completely on my studies rather because I was in school full time. Well, I'm currently still in school full time, actually at Hennepin Tech, and Summit has helped me try to get my, we're still working on getting my credits transferred over smoothly because like they said, some come over and some don't, but we're definitely doing our best. But yeah, sorry, I kind of went in circles there, but.
Well, I had to transfer when I was younger, so I know what that feels like.
Oh yeah, it's fun.
But Mr. Parker, you touched on something I think has always kind of impressed me about Summit is it's not just about helping people get a job, it's about helping people find a career.
Definitely, that's what we like to say, that it is about a career. And I think that's especially true for, well, it was historically true for the construction industry, but now, of course, many of the newer jobs are in the IT field. And so it's been great to work on these new programs and we're getting a lot of interest in them. So, yeah, okay. And it's a career, a good career.
Any other questions for any of our testifiers? Okay. Well, seeing none, Senator Housley, any closing comments?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, again for the opportunity to hear this bill. Angel, you got confidence. Wow, amazing. The Summit Academy has received 3 investments over the last 4 years to date. They've gotten $5.85 million and been very successful and responsible in handling it and hearing the stories. I'm surprised Jerry didn't go through there. But hearing the great stories and the work that they do, I think it's another worthy investment from the state. I would like to thank, again, my co-authors, Senator Dietzick and Senator Champion, for co-sponsoring it with me because we like this organization. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Housley. Senate File 3342 will be laid on the table for possible inclusion. Thank you all for coming today. Thank you. Members, that includes our business for today. We do have a meeting scheduled for Wednesday, March 9th. So if there's nothing else to come before the committee, we'll stand adjourned until then. Thank you.